Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey everybody, and welcome to coverage of season 3 of Dead to Me, a show which has ended. So Dead to Me is over, but we here at Post Row Recaps are just getting started. Hi, I'm LaTanya. You probably recognize my voice by now. Feel free to turn off the podcast at any time if you're annoyed by it. I am here with some help because I frankly, and without a therapist, can't talk about this season alone. So I would like to introduce you to the three best friends that anyone has had, which includes me and of course my ride or die and Wednesday co-host Marissa Garza. Marissa, how are you?
Hey, LaTanya, I'm doing as well as one can on a season about grief. But, you know, grief called and I will always answer.
Well, that's good.
Trauma or grief or generational trauma or any of those things. Just count me in. So I'm glad to be here with both of you.
There's a lot of trauma this season, too.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So I'm ready.
I'm ready.
My trauma hat on. I'm ready to go.
Good. And the newest addition to the coven. You remember her from such wonderful things as Shit 90 Shows Taught Me, and also from the two of us talking about the full season 5 of The Crown. Now we're here to talk to you about season 3 of Dead to Me. Everybody, it is the Duchess herself, Sarah Ferguson. Sarah, how are you?
Here I am. I finished my duties of watching the corgis. Now I'm on my
twice.
Now I'm on my first out of 999 cranes that have to be made.
How are the cranes going?
Really bad. Really bad. So I challenged myself, full transparency, before I started the podcast. I said, hey, you know what? I've never made a paper crane before. I feel like I can do it. I'm an artsy person. I have a fine arts degree. Ooh. I have a very artsy type job working in design. I said, I'm capable. I can do it. No, it's challenging. And I thought that I was going to be like, Jen is so silly. She can't make one paper crane. This is hard. This is the hardest thing I've had to do in years. And I'm on probably step 4. And I don't
know.
How
many?
Unlimited.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which is why I am Jen. And I will look at the instructions as if I care. Mm-hmm. And then I will task a friend who is good at things to do it for me.
So the funny thing is that that's normally how I do my projects. I like to say like, oh, I have like a more creative mind, but my execution isn't great. So I got like my very good friend to do my Christmas tree, my graduation cap, like, you know how we decorated them.
Like, you are like an influencer outsourcing.
I outsource. So I understand. Like, I understand the thought process of Jen saying, Judy.
Yeah.
I mean, if you are up to it, please make 1,000 paper cranes. And Judy is the artsy girl, and mm-hmm. she's able to do it. I am not. I'm
and likes it. So it's okay. It. You don't have to be good at folding paper cranes. That is not what we are here to talk about today.
No.
I just want to say, though, if you do attempt, every crane is different. Any imperfection is perfection. So continue.
Yes.
Well, currently it just looks like a kite.
No. You're going to have to give us an update later on the cranes.
Yeah.
We have no choice. We are contractually obligated to talk today about Dead to Me season 3. And I guess before we get started getting into the season itself, by the way, this is going to be full spoilers for the entire season. I should have mentioned that up top. If you have not seen Dead to Me seasons 1, Dead to Me season 2, or Dead to Me season 3, then you should not be listening to this podcast, because we will be spoiling the entire show up until the heartbreaking, shocking finale that didn't necessarily need to happen, in my humble opinion. So just so you're warned, please switch off now if you have not seen this show. But
yeah, and also maybe if anybody who hasn't watched the season but just wants to listen, yeah. I think that it's a good idea to obviously this show deals with grief. This season deals with cancer and loss, obviously continued grief. Any other, so if this is,
it's so many things,
it's gonna be heavy. So if yeah. you know, you're not in the right mindset to kind of listen to that type of stuff, it's a dark comedy. There is funny parts of the season, but I definitely think it's our darkest out of three, and it's our last season of Dead to Me, not that we're covering, just that they're making. It's very heavy. So if you're not in the right place, or if you want to come back later, if you're like kind of in a blah mood, like, we get it, you know?
Yeah, it's totally fine. I wish I had had that advice before I watched this season, but I did not know, because none of us did. Right. We'll talk about it. So first, let's talk about our relationship to the show itself, our relationship with Dead to Me. We're watchers since season 1. Any thoughts about season 1, season 2? Did you think there was a sophomore slump? And how do you think inevitably everything was brought to its conclusion, Marissa?
Well, I think for me, I started watching Dead to Me because of Christina Applegate. You know, I've always just been a fan of her. And then also Linda Cardellini, who has been like pretty much in everything ever. But I know her and love her from ER, from her ER days, being a Chicagoan. So I just was really interested to see these two paired up. And also it was a show that was mainly acted by women actors. And so that just, I was in, and then you throw in a little trauma, and I know I joke about trauma, but I've just been talking about trauma a lot. Trauma is no joke. However, I tend to watch a lot of content that has to do with it, 'cause that's part of who I am and how I process things. So it just seemed like it was a show for me. And I was looking up, I couldn't even remember when the first season started, and it apparently started in 2019. And so I think that, like, one of the interesting things about the show with me is it does deal with grief, and there's been so much grief on the global stage between when the show started and now that it just kind of like hits different. Mm-hmm. In different places. And so that's been really interesting to experience. In terms of like a sophomore slump, I would say that I think season 2 didn't know where to go. Although I was reading some things about season 3, and the creator kind of knew what was going to happen with Judy all along, and told Linda Cardellini in the middle of season 2. So knowing that, I might go back and just rewatch things. But the show itself has always been interesting to me, intriguing to me, and had a lot of good conversations that could be had from it if anyone else is watching. So I was always just like along for the ride. Did I invest myself, you know, like, is this my Ted Lasso? Is this my Cobra Kai? Not necessarily, but this is a, you know, it was still an enjoyable watch for me, even though it can be sad at times.
What about you, Sarah? What is your relationship to Dead With Me? What do you think about the seasons 1, 2, and 3 and yes. how it ultimately ended?
Yeah, I think I watched Dead to Me also because of the pairing of Linda Cardellini and Christina Applegate. As a person that loves all 90s content, Christina Applegate has been somebody that like I've loved forever. I think like the first movie that I've watched her in was Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead, which I don't know why I was so fascinated about when I was a kid, but
it's still a great movie.
Such a good movie. One day I'm gonna have to talk about it in some capacity. And then I remember her in The Sweetest Thing with Cameron Diaz and Selma Blair mm-hmm. in the early 2000s, and that movie is like so silly and very early 2000s, but I loved that movie as well. So I've always like seen Christina Applegate and being like, oh, like you're so pretty, you're so cool, like I adore you. And Linda Cardellini, like there's just so much warmth from her as a person. Obviously she ruined every single teenager's life when she played Lauren in Boy Meets World, and we're still mad at her about it.
We are,
but maybe not. Okay. Actually, the funny thing is that we don't need to get into Boy Meets World, but like this is one of the shows that I cover on Shit 90 Shows taught me. We kind of like really liked Lauren, and we also kind of felt like Corey needed to date Lauren at the time, mm-hmm. but that's just a hot take. But we were upset about it at the time. So I definitely went into it watching because of the cast. James Marsden
mm-hmm. yes.
is also somebody that I've always really liked. I remember watching him in another early 2000s movie, Sugar and Spice, which is why am I watching these movies? But
you're dropping some gems here.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, this is like the thing, like these people are iconic, these actors. Of course, he was like Cyclops. Who cares about X-Men? No, I do actually care about X-Men. I don't know why I was doing that.
He was
that.
Corny Collins in the musical Hairspray.
He was also yes. in Enchanted.
Yes.
Yeah. So
such an attractive idiot. You know, he is I so love it.
Cute. He's adorable, and I love his stinking face and his big blue eyes and yeah. his like Prince Eric hair. Like he's just gorgeous.
Yeah.
So. Watching the first season, I really liked it. I thought that it had like all the right twists and turns. I thought that it was like really kept me going. When I got to the second season, I had a very hard time watching it at my first go. And I think it's because I was okay with Judy harboring secrets and not wanting to go to the police and like having this whole thing with Steve and all that drama. But when it was Jen who was harboring those secrets, I don't know why, but it really stressed me out. Like mm-hmm. sometimes when I watch these shows where, and I watch a lot of them, where like people make mistakes and they don't go to the police and we just have to like follow their like anxiety ridden mm-hmm. life, I feel the anxiety. And I remember watching Dead to Me. When it first came out, the second season, and I was very stressed, and I could not get through it. I had to go 2 months later to finish it out because I just got so stressed, and she kept making dumb mistakes, and it's like I really wanted to root for Jen, and then there was like certain things that I'm like, these moves are really dumb, like really really dumb, and I can't justify them.
Yeah,
and I wasn't feeling it, so I would say like. To me, Dead to Me season 2 was a sophomore slump. Now mm-hmm. we get to season 3, and I'm going to say like what season 3 does is it gets a bit tropey and they get quote unquote cute about a lot of things. And I think like the main thing is like, of course, Ben is the one that hit them. And then of course, mm-hmm, Ben is mm-hmm. the one that's now keeping a secret. And there's just like so many things. It's like, they want everything to connect, but it's almost like quote unquote too cute. Like it just like is too fabricated, I guess. But
Yeah, there we'll are a get, lot of steps.
Yeah,
we'll get into it.
We'll get into it. But there, I did like this season, but I liked elements of this season. And I like the characters. And I think like that's the hardest thing is that like when you like the characters, you don't want them to ruin their lives, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's like I don't want Jen to hide from the police. And I don't want Jen. You do. Mm-hmm. I don't want her to make these mistakes. And like I don't want these things to happen. But they just keep doing it. And that's kind of like what I struggle with.
Makes total sense. While we're talking about the cast, before I guess we get into the actual in and outs of season three itself, let's just, you know, have a quick discussion about it. So I'll say that I started watching Dead to Me because of Christina Applegate, and I've loved Linda Cardellini since Freaks and Geeks as well. Mm-hmm. Thought that she was a completely different character than I'd ever seen her be before on Mad Men. During some really interesting episodes. So definitely had to watch this show. That combined with the fact that it was about grief, which is, you know, something that's almost ever present to me at this point. And I've been angry about it. Like I felt all of the like F words that come out of Jen on a constant basis because I've said them before. But I think we've talked a lot about the two main characters kind of off the bat. Anything else that you didn't get to say anything really about James Marsden, Marissa. He is an integral part of this cast. It's like a three pander.
Yeah, I mean, I think he plays well with the two of them. I think it was very, you know, putting him in that spot to play two brothers, mm-hmm. it was good. The chemistry between everyone was good. And he was able to be himself in a way, like the James Marsden that we know. I think it was also you know, the show really did dive deep at one point, like Ed Asner was on, like it's like Christina, the late great Ed Asner. Like she called all her friends and was like, she hey, I'm doing this show, hey Natalie Morales, you want to be on this, hey hey Ed, you want to stop on by, you know? And even like her mother, and I don't know the actress's name, but like the lady who plays grandma, like she's from Northern Exposure.
Killing like, me that I can't remember her name, because this woman is an icon.
She's but I know her from
Mallory Mahaffey.
So you know, like just
correct? Katie Seagal.
Oh,
Katie Seagal. She was Sons of Anarchy.
She's everywhere.
She was in Married with Children. Very much a key to our heart as like a young kid. And even, this dysfunctional family.
The guy who plays the judge on The Good Place is in this. Like it was just kind of like everywhere you turn, you never knew who was going to show up. And so mm-hmm. I think the people who did show up didn't show up just for a paycheck. You could tell that they were there because of Christina. I'm assuming because of Linda or the story, like somebody connected, they showed up because they wanted to. And I think that that's what made the show more enjoyable for me to watch, is because one, I was always surprised. And then two, I was just taken by how genuine their performance, everyone's performance was, in terms of, you know, they're not phoning it in. Like they wanted to show up for the story. And I mean, it does cover grief, and grief is a universal thing. And as we talk about the story, I think we'll kind of dissect how it can be cyclical, how it can like seep into all areas of your life. And so that's one of the reasons why I think the show has like a wide appeal, is because like everyone deals with grief at some point and in some way.
Yeah. All right. Nick Prager, played by Brandon Scott, and Ana Perez, played by Diana Marie Riva. Love them as much as anyone can love a cop, right, Sarah?
Yeah, I mean, so we first meet Nick in the first season, and he is currently off duty. And didn't they meet at the grief circle?
Yeah, probably.
So
he was there for his partner, right?
Right. So, and then Judy and Nick formed a relationship. And I think like that was my favorite like element of Nick, because I thought that they were really great together in the first season. Like I liked their dynamic. And of course, Judy decided that she would rather be with Steve the moment she thought that she was pregnant, blah, 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 blah. And this season, I thought it was interesting because he's back on duty. He is working lesser cases with Perez. He's currently on the hit and run, not the first hit and run, the other hit and run, which was got Jen in the hospital. That was kind of like the twist at the end of the second season. And then Perez is, she's great. Like we get three seasons of her. I think it's really nice to see like a powerful woman who's on top of it. I think that's interesting that like as the seasons go on, she's like less and less like firm at her job.
Yeah, like militant about everything.
Exactly.
And she has the best hair.
Oh, well, the hair. Oh, and it's so funny because like once again, like in the first maybe first season, like one of the things I really do like about this show is the repeated jokes. And one of the things that Judy always did when she saw Perez was like, did you do something for your hair? And Perez was always like, no. Every single time they interacted.
It's a question that you get asked a lot when you're a woman of color and you've done nothing.
Hair?
It's like,
but
you
know, her hair never even moved an inch. She just had fabulous hair.
Just gorgeous
and every
hair.
Single time she was like, did you do something in your hair? And she's like, no. So I think that it's interesting because it's like, she really started forming an affection for Jen and a sympathy. But that once again, like, is that really in her character? And I mean, she talked about the fact that she hates being a cop first and a human second. So I did like seeing that development from her. It's just like, once again, like it gets a little silly, but she's great. She's great.
So, Marissa, we got Frances Conroy playing Eileen Wood, the legend herself, the supreme Frances Conroy. She's a part of my favorite ever season of American Horror Story.
I love
she plays Myrtle Snow.
Myrtle Snow, who screams out
her last word is Balenciaga. And given everything happening with that brand right now,
I wish that Myrtle Snow now at least would say a different last word, but. Yeah.
I
it was
know
iconic
her from,
at the time.
Yeah. 6 feet Under.
6 feet Under is where everybody kind of came to know her after she had already had a very like decorated career everywhere else. It was just that she came into human consciousness on HBO in 6 feet Under, and was fantastic. And she is kind of bookend by Lorna Harding, who is played by Valerie Mahaffey, just kind of the worst mother-in-law that anyone could ask for. But who loves those kids? Like, that's really important.
That's true. She loves the boys, but also in her mind, that's all she has left. Yeah. But she's an interesting boss, isn't she? Because she is off and on Jen's boss at the real estate company. Not a warm mother-in-law, that's for sure.
No. And then finally, let's talk about the boys, Marissa. Charlie Harding, Henry Harding, played by Sam McCarthy, and Luke Rossler. What do you think? Normally, kid actors can take me out of something, but I think there's something about these boys that's really sweet.
I mean, they really were dialed into the story. I'm sorry, I am not great with names. So I don't necessarily know where they might have been before that. But in terms of their performances on this show, you could tell that they were like really brothers. Like they felt like brothers to me. And they really care for Jen as a mother figure in that way. Mm-hmm. And they were boys. Like they were just regular, you know. They didn't like go over the top. It wasn't anything. You know, you could tell that they were lived in roles, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Very true.
Yeah, you could tell that Christina Applegate and Linda Cardellini like harbored like an actual relationship outside. Because characters are not that good. So especially the little one. Like, and I think like it helps that the little one was like the Henry was like a really like little kid when he started, and this was probably like 6 years of developing a relationship with Linda Cardellini and Christina Applegate. So he's like pretty much growing up into young adulthood or young boyhood, teenagehood, whatever. I don't know about boys.
I don't know what age that kid is.
I don't know what boys do.
Like 11? I don't know.
But you can tell that they've like, you know, spent years together, and it really is sweet, especially there is one scene where, oh my god, like this really got me, where like Henry said to
The iPad scene where you threw the iPad in.
No, this was sweet, but like Henry says to Linda Cardellini, like, you're like, I love you, like you're my second mom. And then it's like right after, like Linda Cardellini is like, I don't have a purpose because I don't have a child and I will never have a child, but like, oh. But then when Henry was like, you're my second mom, it's like, that's giving Judy purpose that she needed in that moment. And that got me. I was like, this is too much. This is too much. It's too sweet. Like,
it was very sweet.
Little cute boys like that, I just like have such a softness, and I'm barely someone that tolerates children. Barely. But that really got me.
Yeah. So we've broken down the kind of key components of the cast. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about overall thoughts on season 3, as well as the episodes themselves. We'll be right back.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And we're back. All right. Overall thoughts on the season. And you can keep some of the big questions in mind that we'll go through. Again, spoilers ahead for anyone who did not hear me before. Big questions. How did the FBI guy die? Was it Judy's mom? Was it the scones? Was it Perez? I think it was Perez.
Oh, that's interesting.
Well, I don't think I think the scones killed him, and then Perez made it look like someone had messed up the scene so she could take the files.
Interesting.
That's what I had thought, mainly because the lines throughout the season for Perez have like bordered on like, I'm still a cop, but I also have friendship relationships with these people.
Right.
And she, you know, has kind of stepped into that space before. And so that's kind of where I thought it was going.
That surprises you, Sarah?
I didn't even think about Perez at all. So and I'm trying to recall the episode in particular where the FBI agent died. Obviously, we know that Jen brought the scones, mm-hmm. and he like was choking on them a little bit. And this is and she proposed this plan to Judy, so that's right. why, you know. But that kind of makes me feel like it's a red herring. And had the scones were not poisoned, and he did not die by scone. What I thought what happened was so Judy's mom comes mm-hmm. in. We find out this season that she has a mom. We mm-hmm. know that she had like a weird relationship with her mom, but her mom's in prison, and we see their relationship a couple of times. And then ultimately, Jen tells Judy's mom that she has cancer and kind of yells at her and is like, you've never been there for her. Like, you are like not a good mother. And I think like with Judy wound up like giving her car to her mother or something like that. Like, I feel like that was Judy's mom's way of being like, I might have not always been there for my daughter, but I can do this for her. Like, I can take care of this.
Ooh. See, what I thought was that what Judy's mom thought of I can take care of this was putting on the bracelet that you have to wear, like the, I don't know what they're called, the things that make you stay in the house or within like a certain limit so the police correct. Can track you. Yeah. And she took that and took the car and drove to San Francisco. While Judy,
oh, is that what she was doing?
Yeah, because they showed it on her leg.
I'm stupid. I need them to tell
me. No, it's just hard to watch a show multiple times when it's this much about grief for little details. You know what I mean? There's a lot going on in every episode. So much.
Why did we see Perez with the files? Is that why we're saying we did? Okay, so I missed that. And that's the thing, like this show really does have very little details that you have to look out for. And I missed it and I theorized differently.
No, I like the theory. We welcome a theory around these parts.
So we really do think that Jen poisoned the scones.
Well, it's also possible the men that were walking in were the men we saw later in the desert that weren't FBI agents. They were the syndicate.
Yes,
not the mafia. It's a syndicate.
It's a syndicate. Yeah.
And so it's possible that they could have killed him
through some foul play,
right? Through foul play, but before they were able to get in there, somehow Perez did, because of course they would have taken the files and not just killed him,
right?
Perez, I feel like Perez is involved in somehow.
She's involved somehow.
Okay.
I mean, it's a mystery.
it's a mystery. They don't outline it. You know, they really don't tell you exactly what happened there. And I think like there's like a couple of things that they wanted to leave in a gray area for people like us to theorize and try to figure out and piece together what happened. Exactly. And I think it maybe does need a second watch to really be like, oh, like maybe this is what was happening. I just like, who poisons the scones, man? Like scones are dry enough.
Yes, like, but Jen specifically said, it's time for this MF to die. Let's poison these scones.
I know, but that's like, you know, like that's like me, like, oh, I'm gonna, you know, do all these things and I'm never gonna do anything. I couldn't even think of one thing. I'm the worst criminal that did one thing live.
Not one.
That's like the thing. Like, oh, like I
that's ugh, okay. I that's okay. We Judy. You're melting down a little bit. It sounds like you're trying to summon the Winter Soldier right now. So we'll move on.
Well, I was just gonna say, when it comes to things like this though, if it was important, they would have made it obvious. And so you know, like In this case, this is not a story. There is a murder story involved. There is talk of murder, but at its heart, I think like its creators don't want us necessarily. Right. Like they would have told us.
I don't care how that guy died. I'm not gonna joke. Like
that's
I don't care.
It is. It doesn't matter, right?
Like he what had matters? He had Judy's DNA, or sorry, he had Jen's DNA. So I don't care how he died. talk to me later about my moral compass. Is Judy still out there somewhere, or was us seeing the boat kind of confirmation that she passed peacefully?
I think she passed peacefully. I think that was the whole point of the show, really. It's like grief upon grief. I just got done podcasting about Cobra Kai, so it's going to be a very weird analogy that I'm about to draw. But within the Karate Kid universe, they talk a lot about circular motion, how things just continue to go in a cycle. And I feel like that was really prevalent in the season in terms of grief. And we weren't going to leave this series without Jen returning to that grief spot. And that is through, you know, through Judy's death. And kind of, you know, one time my therapist said to me, like, life is like a mountain and you continue going around the mountain, but every time you're a little bit higher. So like water can't get to you, or you can't, you know, you could still have like rocks fall on you, I guess. This is a really bad analogy, but you're like further up. Okay. Like, so imagine a mountain.
Yeah.
Okay. And there's like a circular spiral path around the mountain.
Got it.
Every time you come up against something like grief or something, you're walking on this path and you're going to come back to the same point, but you're going to be at a different elevation because you've learned something and you've processed something and things like that. And that's what I was really mindful of during the season, because Jen, the series starts with grief and it ends with grief. Now, having, you know, done some preparation for the podcast and looking into why that may have been, it turns out that like the creator of the show had lost a friend in real life around the age of 38 and just decided to write it in the show. And so, you know, everyone deals with things in their own way, but I think it was definitely a purposeful choice on her part to put that part in there. For I think, to answer your question, I think she died peacefully, but I also you know, have all of those other thoughts around it as well.
I think she died peacefully as well.
I think that ultimately that's what it is. I think that it's kind of interesting because one of the stages of grief is like trying to like justify or like find like other possibilities. And I think that a lot of people that watch the show is trying to find like an alternative universe of what could have happened so that people who love Judy didn't have to deal with the grief of Judy passing away. So I saw a lot of people theorizing like, oh, Jen is in a coma from the accident in the beginning, and these are like her worst nightmares that are happening, and none of this is real, and Judy's really okay. Or that like Judy like sailed away and like got to have like a peaceful life on like in Mexico and all this stuff. And I think that that's kind of like the easiest thing to swallow. Right? Because
It's definitely, as someone who did not know what season 3 of this show was going to be about, but just celebrated the 5th anniversary of my aunt passing away from cancer, that she originally had breast cancer and then it spread and metastasized, and then not long after she was gone. I was not prepared for anything that happened. I wasn't prepared for the time spent in the hospitals, because that just reminds me of all the time I spent in the hospital. Before being ill and also after. And I was not prepared to just like relive what it felt like to go through, because this is a really intimate tale. I mean, we know that, you know, speaking of chronic illness, Christina Applegate has had several battles with cancer and now has MS. You know, it's one of those things where this was incredibly true to life. You know, the things that you feel and the ways that you want to try to help people and spend time with them, and, you know, how people, how, what chemo does to a person, like all of that stuff is incredibly real. You can tell that the people involved actually experienced it, but it's kind of harrowing to experience when you're just tuning in for your little fun getaway of a show. And then it's just this.
I did feel a little blindsided, because I think one of the other reasons why I liked Dead to Me in the beginning is the murder mystery aspect of it. Like, I like shows like Big Little Lies or Little Fires Everywhere, where there's like a mystery or like there's something like that. And I wasn't expecting it to go down this path eventually.
No one was. It wasn't exactly marketed this way.
Exactly. So I do think like it was sad, but I guess like the thing is that, you know, we're discussing kind of like, oh, like who kills blah, blah, blah. Well, it doesn't really matter because like that's not what the story is about. The story is about friendship and grief surrounding people that you lose that are important in your life. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's really what it was about. So I suppose like it had to ultimately, this was a story of Jen and Judy's friendship and how they needed each other in those moments. Like Jen needed the friendship like that. I mean, it's kind of funny because like in the first season, we were like, Judy, you're freaking delusional. Like you are implanting yourself in Jen's life in a way that you probably shouldn't be. But Judy kept saying she needs me as a friend. Like she needs me, like I'm helping her. And she was right. Like Jen really did need a friend like Judy.
Yes.
She needed Judy to warm. I mean, Jen's a little prickly. She needed somebody like Judy to warm her heart. Like she needed somebody to support her and her children. Like ultimately, she met Ben through Judy. Mm-hmm. And if you believe in, you know, fate and like, you know, the golden invisible string that leads you to the path that you're supposed to be on, like if all this stuff wouldn't have happened if she didn't meet Judy and this hidden run didn't happen, she wouldn't have met Ben and she wouldn't have had you know, her baby, which is like a whole nother thing that I was like, woo-wee, like
I know,
like kind of a lie.
I know. I forecasted that she was pregnant when she started talking about starting menopause because I was just like, oh Lord, are they really gonna make this woman
it's
pregnant?
It's like too cute, right? Like that's where I'm going back to. Like it's too much. Yeah,
and
like
the baby was adorable.
Oh my god, that was the most rounded-headed baby I ever did. Find yourself a baby with that perfect of a round head.
That's
like
such a cute baby.
I would throw in Alora Dannon from Willow if you're watching the movie in preparation for the show. Also very cute.
Like, yeah, really?
Yeah, okay. I would say they're honorable mentions.
Good. Speaking of Ben, I would let that man ruin my life. I don't know about you all, but.
Ben, so I understand. No.
I understand. Yeah, Ben, yes. I understand Jen being like, you know, the queen of wine, being like, fine, I will end up with this alcoholic, meaning that I probably cannot drink around him ever.
Which would only benefit her, to be honest.
So, next question. Does Jen, we're talking about the very last episode here, people, the very last seconds of the very last episode. Does Jen tell Ben about what happened to Steve in the end of the show? Does Ben forgive her as he is happy for the first time with her as things are? Or was it selfish? Would it, if Jen did tell him, was it selfish of her to tell the truth?
I mean, I think the show leaves it like this on purpose, but I also think they were sort of leaning towards, we get the picture of the cat like nudging at the door of the guest house, which is a very big, you know, like Judy's here sign type of thing. I would like to think that she told him, mainly because that would show growth from her in that way. I think he might take a while to forgive her, but I think she gets there.
He was just lounging in the pool. His brother drowned him.
So this
I mean, that's what I would hope.
You really, you just love mess because there's no other reason to tell this man that
the truth.
His brother wasn't killed by the Greek syndicate.
There is, I mean, but there is, but from why? Like, if you know, I'm watching the show through like a healing perspective type of thing, and like every time somebody had like a secret of some sort, it never did anybody any good. And so I wonder if like that's going through Jen's mind at that moment, and that like telling the truth can help her in some way. The other way, she's gonna have to carry this for a long time, and that's a long thing to carry. You're looking at a carbon copy of this man pretty much every day. I don't know if I'd be able to hold it in.
But Steve sucked.
Oh, sure.
So my perspective of this is he literally said he's happy for the first time in his life. You want to tell the secret and tell the truth to absolve your guilt. What is it going to, like, this is, it kind of like benefits you and only you, because Bennett has accepted that it was the Greeks, like, this is what happened, like, his life is fine, but you're going to throw a wrench into it. I think that if Jen told Ben the truth, that only makes Jen feel better, in my opinion. Like, I feel like at this point, like, it's resolved as much as it possibly could. Like, the FBI are not hounding her. They're not knocking on the door. Like, Ben and Ben's mom have accepted what ultimately happened. By you revealing the truth, like, it's holding on to you. It's your heaviness. But ultimately, like, what is that going to do for Ben? Ben doesn't want to know the truth. He wants to be happy, and he has a family for the first time in his life. Well, actually, he said that he had a son at one point. It's like,
where's the he's got a son in college somewhere.
Right, but whatever. He says that it's the first time he's ever been happy. Like, he's sober. Like, he's sober for the first time in his life.
Until,
like,
she for, tells him.
But until he tells him. It's only going to put him in a spiral. So it's kind of like... Yeah. Ultimately, you're just messing him up.
No, I'm not.
No, not you. Not you.
Like, nobody, like, from my perspective, like, Jen can't show up as her full self with this all of the time. And Ben deserves that.
Is Jen ready to lose everything?
That's a question.
Because that, for her to tell the truth, then that's what she has to be willing to sacrifice. And then... I don't know. Like, I think, like, it's a very interesting, like, moral argument. Like, I think that, I don't know. What is this philosophy?
It's, yeah, like... but especially in telling Ben, because Ben is doing the steps, and you can't have secrets when you're recovering from alcohol or drug addiction.
Right.
That's what drives you toward more addiction.
Right.
So
it just, it's, in my opinion, like, for her to tell the truth, it might make you feel better and you might be able to give your full self, but then, like, ultimately it's going to unfold. Like, you're going to change.
Oh, yeah. There will be consequences.
Oh, for
I don't
sure.
Know. Yeah. I don't know. I guess I'm immoral. I think
no,
that, like,
no. I'm not saying that at all.
I know you're not, but
we're not here to judge each other's morality.
I just think, like, ultimately it's your guilt that you're trying to make yourself feel better about is not going to make Ben feel better.
It's the lifelong question of, if you cheat on your partner, do you tell them that you cheated, or do you just kind of, like, realize you're still in love with this person and move on? It's like the same. Like, is it gonna help you, or is it gonna help them, or is it gonna just break everything apart? It's the classic dilemma.
I mean, I hope, like, again, I'm on team tell him, but I feel like maybe not right at that moment by
the
pool.
Not
like,
there.
Maybe like, hey, I have to tell you something later tonight after we put the kids to bed. Like, type of thing.
Yeah.
I get that, like, in that moment, like, he's definitely on cloud nine, that type of situation. I just, that's a lot to hold for a long time.
Yeah. Next big question. Do you think that Perez and Nick think of everything? They have all the knowledge, or do they? Are they just letting everything go?
Yeah, like, it's kind of frustrating because it's okay. So we skip ahead, whatever, 6 months, 7 months, I don't know. And we don't get resolution for that. I think that now that I know that maybe Perez was involved in covering it up, I think that, you know, answers a little bit of my question regarding that. But, like, what about Nick? Like, why does Nick not care about revealing the truth?
Mm-hmm. Also an addict. This is a lot of secrets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very interesting. But, I mean, as far as we know, those files get burned. So no one really gets to see them unless they were, I don't know, because it's 2022. Backed up on a computer, and those were just
in the cloud. Marissa, how's your cloud doing, and can I get access to it?
Yeah. I really want to help you cleanse yourself.
Yeah, where's your safe room? Because I would really like to. How about we start with the first year?
Yeah. I am on a podcast. I am not going to talk about it.
Later. All right. Did Jen not get in trouble for aiding and abetting a criminal?
Okay. But once again, I didn't know. That's a great question. I didn't know that, like, Judy's mom had the stinking ankle bracelet or ankle monitor, rather, and, like, went to San Fran. But did she? Did she get in trouble? This is like, they don't answer these questions.
And if we know anything about how they answer these questions, is that if she did, she would get out very quickly with good behavior.
Oh, yeah.
Because they are very realistic about how quickly white people get out of prison in this show. And it just... I think in general, glad about it.
Yeah, there's a lot of white privilege just like throughout the whole show in terms of what these women are able to get away with and how they are able to get away with all of it. So yeah, it wouldn't be a long stay if she did get caught.
So what do we think about Ben going to I mean, I'm assuming we don't feel great about it, but Ben is the only one that can admit to any crimes, which makes me really like Ben. And he does go to jail, which he rightfully says, I deserve this. I should be in jail. I should, you know, but he was only there for like, what, like a day and a half? I don't know. Like, how long was he in jail?
No, he was there for at least 3 weeks because they were in, they spent 3 weeks away the time of the clinical trial. Okay. But that's still a ridiculously short amount of time to get to spend for a hit and run.
Yeah, so he hit and run, and then he like lied to the cops, and then he like ran from the cops, and then he like tried to hide evidence. So like I feel like there's like a lot of charges that he could get on, but yeah, he was in and out
really quick.
Yeah, like there's a lot of Kardashian suspense of belief in this show sometimes when it comes to that kind of stuff. I mean, he did kind of at the end, you know, when he comes into the church, is like, why are you here? Good behavior. Yeah.
Good behavior.
Yeah. That about sums it up on Ben's side of things.
Yeah. Let's get into the actual episodes themselves now. We're not going to be doing kind of like strict episodic recaps because we don't have that much time, but we're going to get to the important parts of the episodes and talk them through. So the most important parts of episode 1 and 2, in my humble opinion, is the fact that we get the result of who was there to do the hit and run. It leaves both Jen and Judy in the hospital. Judy is able to swipe some drugs using the old trick that she used to use when her mother wanted to do the same when she was a kid by faking a seizure, which honestly, congratulations to this woman for getting this done, because that is not how a Pyxis works. And they're also, you know, during the time that they're spending at the hospital, Judy learns that they found the body, which happened to be buried below a heart in federal territory. So the case itself is federal. Ben is there. Because he's driven there.
By Charlie,
who is just like, man, you need to get it together. And also your nose is probably broken. That's how he happens to meet Judy there. But he only learns that the hit and run people were these two women and blah, 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 and figures out it's Jen and Judy. And Judy nor Ben can apologize to each other about what they really want to apologize to each other about. Then Jen, left to her own, is in Judy's bed because she accidentally spilled water all over hers. And the doctor comes in to tell her that he sees shadows on the CT scan. And that is a very likely cancer diagnosis, even though he is not an oncologist. And then it's kind of about, and it's a really interesting the way that they do it, because Jen's mother, having died from cancer and she nursed her mom through cancer, she takes this news in thinking it's all about her. And then she is called Judy's name and it's just like, oh crap, instead of me, it's all about my best friend. And now it's up to Jen to tell Judy that Judy has cancer.
Yeah. And it was interesting because she was very resistant to getting the MRI because what she said was nothing ever good comes from these tests.
Very true.
She really wanted to live in a world of denial about it. And then what ultimately happened was she was okay and Judy was not. And then she holds on to this information for what, like a episode and a half, not telling Judy that she has potential cancer. I had an issue with that, Marissa. Like how did you feel in those moments where she was holding like life altering information from Judy? It was ridiculous, in my opinion.
Yeah, if the tables were turned, it would have not been this way. you know, like Jen wasn't being a really good friend. I was, you know, I did watch this entire season with the knowledge that Christina Applegate has MS and is like going through active treatment for it. So I was really cognizant of the fact, like, are they going to do this? She's going to live this out in when she had the original, when she thought it was her type of thing.
Exactly. I had that thought in my head as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And so they kind of tossed the ball over to Judy on that one. But you know, it was not good play by Jen. I felt a little betrayed by her, mainly because the friendship means more to her than this. Like she like stooped to a little bit lower of a level than I was. Granted, these women have done some things and they've done some things to each other. But this is like something that wasn't done to Judy by someone else, or, you know, this is just a fact that she kept from her friend. And I didn't like it.
Yeah, no, it was uncomfortable at best to watch this woman make cupcakes for her son while she fully knew that she had cancer, or at least questionable tests that would lead most people to go and immediately try to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, I just thought it was interesting because like they're harping so much on like honesty, especially between each other. And then that's what she goes off and does. And I think like that was it just felt like some of the worst moments of the season.
Yeah, it's not great, but you also just put yourself in Jen's shoes. A doctor is supposed to deliver this news to someone.
Yes.
You're not supposed to have to deliver this news for the doctors, for sure. I don't know how they didn't sue that hospital. I would own that hospital right now. If that were either of me or Jen, Judy or Jen. Anyway. Like
you should know your patients.
There's the thing called HIPAA also.
Yeah. Like, that's why I would own the hospital.
Yeah. Yeah.
Complete violation of HIPAA rights. And you're supposed to check someone's wristband before you give them any information anyway. Not just look at what bed they're in. What are you doing?
In this universe, there is no.
Was that the same doctor that we saw later who was like, oh, like which mushrooms are you on?
That was the same nurse.
The same nurse, rather. Yeah. Okay.
So episodes 3 and 4, we find out that Nick has discovered that there is a piece of everyone's discovered at police headquarters a piece of something was lodged in Steve's skull. And it's Nick that kind of determines that it is this bird, this wooden bird that the little son had that he gave to Ben because he just found out that his brother died and he was having kind of a tough day. And he also found out that he had hit and run, these two women, and not just anyone else, because no one else would count. And these two women in particular. So yeah, it changes hands a couple times. Judy goes in finally to get an MRI. She goes to the FBI agent because why wouldn't she, to kind of,
oh, so yeah, this relationship was so weird, right? With her and the FBI agent throughout the season. Like she thought that she befriended him, and there was times where I'm like, Judy, you're doing like a really terrible job with him. But also then there's times where I'm like, maybe he's okay. But I definitely think that he like figured everything out. He's supposed to be this FBI agent that eventually got killed at the end. Was supposed to be like the creme de la creme FBI agent.
The MVP of the FBI.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
Jen kind of uses this time to work on her faith by praying for Judy's health. Judy gets the call from the doctor that we all get to see play out on Linda Carlini's face when she receives the news that she does, in fact, have cervical cancer that has spread to her liver. Finally, they manage to get the bird back and they burn the bird and take out the garbage with like the remains of this bird. But as soon as as Jen is putting the trash out, she notices that the FBI agent or someone is just kind of sitting in a car looking at her. We see later that FBI agent actually got a bottle out of her garbage. Because once you put trash out on the corner, it is free domain. No matter what you've put out there, the cops can just come and take it. And so he does. He gets some DNA. And then in episode 4, we find out that Judy has cervical cancer. It's stage 4. They cannot do surgery. They have to start chemo. And Judy kind of goes into like a bit of a Neverland here. She's having a hard time trying to process everything. We get Steve's funeral, even though there's no body. They just bury a very expensive suit.
Yeah, that was a little weird.
It's pretty great. Judy is back at her job trying to take her mind off things. So she steals Michelle's mom from the nursing home and takes her to go get a margarita and some soft serve, which sounds like a great thing to do for someone who's been cooped up in a hospital for a long time wearing a mask. Of course, Jen somehow gets roped into going to the repast, which they call an after party for Steve's funeral. And she gets stuck in a creepy doll room that reminds me of one of my ex-boyfriend's mother's homes.
Wow.
I feel like everything that you're describing is such a fever dream.
Yes. That's what this show feels like.
It's like there's a funeral, but there's no body. And there's like a creepy doll room and we get stuck in it. And there's a bird.
There's so many wooden birds.
Basically there's like this whole thing where like Judy like fixed the bird. And I was like, oh, actually, that's really smart, because if somebody tries to confiscate the bird, then it will have a tail and it's like, oh, it can't be that bird, right? No, we got to fix the bird to burn the bird. But then we're also going to have 20 non-painted birds hidden in my bedroom.
So many birds.
I was like, what the fuck? Like, how? Okay. It's when like the someone... Michaels is this? Like, do you have a coupon?
Yeah. Well, Ben just bought a lot of birds.
But why did he need that many birds?
I don't know. Nothing makes any sense.
One bird. One bird to fix the tail. You keep the tail.
Yeah.
You burn. Okay, this is what you do. Okay, wait, hold on. What about my morals?
Please tell us how to get away with murder.
Okay. No, I don't know how. But you fix the bird by using the tail. Then when somebody looks for the bird to confiscate the bird, you have an entire bird with a tail. And then you burn the replacement bird that you took the tail from to hide that evidence.
Burn both birds, because one of them is technically the murder weapon. So you definitely burn the murder weapon.
No, but the tail. Because do you see what I'm saying?
I see what you're saying. Like, you repair the bird.
Yeah. And then they're like, oh, I insist to look at your tail. And then it was like, oh, there's the tail. But although I think that you probably see the seam. That's the only issue. But wood filler. There's wood filler.
Sure. There's so many birds. and then at the end of this episode, Michelle and Jen hook up when a really weird thing happens because Michelle and Judy hook up. Mm-hmm. They should not have named these characters Jen and Judy.
It's a little,
I'm just gonna put it out there.
It's a little testy sometimes.
Michelle does this creepy thing where she totally hears Judy tell her that she has cancer and pretends to be asleep. That's another fever dream that happened. And at the same time, Ben admits to Jen that he was responsible for the hit and run. Because Patsy Cline is on, it means that they make out. And so there's just parallel sex the friends are having parallel sex.
Yeah. And Jen's totally cool with it. She's like, because she's trying to be like, to justify, oh, you went tit for tat, one for one, right? I killed your brother. You hit me with a car. And we're even.
So why not have a good, like,
why not? Why not? Or as Judy would put it, fall on his penis.
Sassy.
The classiest way I can think to put it. All right. I still can't believe any of these things happened in the season, nor can I believe that Netflix literally gave this show 10 episodes.
They greenlit it? Yeah.
No, not that they greenlit it, but that they gave the final season 10 whole episodes. We did not need 10.
Netflix hasn't gotten the update that, like, we prefer, at least me, a 6 to 8 episode season. I don't think I need the full 10.
Yeah, Netflix, be more British.
Well, this was 10 30-minute episodes. Yeah, so
I have a bad, really bad attention span.
That's fair. Yeah. I totally thought the show ended. Like, I was watching episode 9 and I was like, okay.
Oh, this is the end.
And then I was like, oh, there's
I did the same thing. Let's talk about 5 and 6 because things get worse. Everyone's waking up from their assignations. And Ben really wants to take a bath. So that's something that happens.
I mean, baths are nice, but I did find that funny. He's like, would it be weird if I took a bath? And I think, like, what's his name? Charlie walks in, he's like, oh, you're taking a bath? Like,
I guess they're just trying to say that men should take more baths.
Baths are for everyone.
Wait, hold on. Is this before or after they realize that the entire pipes to the bathroom are corroded?
Before.
This is before.
Because like, that was that. Something else.
He was like, I'll fix this.
So he took the bath, and then he realized that the bath was clogged, and then he realized that there's a bunch of hair. Because, of course, and that all the pipes are corroded because Jen dumped out her rat acid into the tub.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Again, if you're listening to this in a vacuum,
you know what's weird. Funny? All of this made sense at the time, but now that I'm talking about it, I'm like,
I feel like I'm having a stroke right now, honestly. Ben apologizes to Charlie about showing up drunk and then, you know, requiring that child to take him to the hospital. That child takes several people to the hospital this season.
Yeah.
Judy goes back to the doctor that she was initially upset with warns not to tell anybody about, wants to tell no one about her cancer. Judy tells Jen that she's going to Sonoma with Michelle for 3 months because Michelle, before the hooking up happened, mentioned that her restaurant closed and she's thinking about moving to Sonoma to start a new one, but her mother's sick. So she's kind of got to focus on that right now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and then it's like, okay, you would think that Judy would be like, I can't believe you lied to me and didn't tell me right away that I had cancer. And then, like, obviously she could have been upset about it, but then she's like, I'm not going to tell you, Jen, that I have cancer. I'm going to keep that to myself.
No one's talking about cancer in this show.
But you could tell, like, I think you could tell, like, when Judy, she kind of wanted to. She was like, I'm going to Sonoma.
Going to Sonoma.
That's how that's going to go.
I would like to actually go to Sonoma.
Sonoma's beautiful.
It's so gorgeous there.
I've only heard good things.
It's amazing. Friends of Heaven group therapy. That's what it's called. I didn't make that up. Jen and Judy decide that they're going to throw a party for Yolanda because it is her the death day of her husband. Happy death day, they said. And threw her a party. Jen is a little upset that Judy is going to quote unquote Sonoma. Judy gives a pep talk to Yolanda, who is still crying, even though her husband died 25 years ago, which I think is very sweet. Michelle admits that she knows that Judy has cancer and gives her a crystal because if watching those what's inside my bag things has taught me anything, it's that everyone in California has a crystal or
they
two
carry the
in their bags.
In the bag?
They do. All of them.
There's crystals in bags. There's crystals in houses. There's crystals in other places. There's just crystals.
There's crystals in the car. I mean, like, I have some crystals in the house, but I don't, like, charge them by moonlight. I just...
Well, then that's why they're not working.
Oh, I just thought they were pretty.
Yeah. So, yeah. Going to Sonoma, apparently. Ben comes to the party and just immediately gets wasted and starts singing karaoke, because there is a lot of singing in this show.
So much karaoke.
That is not a musical. Much. I mean,
and
I guess
specifically like by James Marsden. I really do wonder if he was like, hey,
can I sing?
I'm gonna be in this. Yeah, let me do this.
He loves singing so much. Like he really does. And he's always saying that he's like every project he does, he's like, can I sing in this? And they're like, no. Stop.
Well, I mean, Enchanted was good for him.
Enchanted was great
for him.
I'm just saying Westworld might not be the place.
Westworld,
to
the
ask
musical.
If you can sing a song. They have to kind of like clean everything up and get people out of there, because Ben falls into the pool, which is very reminiscent and triggers Jen. Because Steve's in the pool and there's blood there, and now his brother, who is a twin, not completely identical, is also in the pool, and there's red wine everywhere that looks like blood, and Jen just kind of has to get out of there. And finally, Judy tells Jen that she has cancer. Finally. Mm-hmm. And Jen promises to be there for Judy. Ben decides to go to the police station wet because he wants to talk to Nick, and he's just like, I need help. So Nick, being a great guy and also in recovery, immediately takes Ben to a meeting. And then the tub falls through the ceiling, because we could not have any more metaphors in this show if we tried. Everything is cracking and breaking at the seams, including the literal house. That is done so quickly, I might say, the repairs, that I question how much money she paid these contractors.
Probably billions. But so this is the thing. Like, I thought that there was going to be like something that came out of the tub falling through the ceiling. I thought like, oh, the contractors are gonna be like, this is really suspicious. Like, why would a person dump acid into a drain?
Nothing and, like, we haven't seen before.
Not like, a single thing.
Like this is so Laguna. It didn't really it's normal, but I thought it was gonna lead to something, you know what I mean?
Nope.
But
just needed that, just wanted a stunt.
Okay, we have extra money in the budget.
Yes. Why don't we
let's
have this
get
house
the let's get the tump the
fall
tub
apart
the ceiling. Yeah, perfect.
I just have to say, as I have a lot of family history in Laguna, so it was cool to see like all of the shots, like of the lighthouse and stuff like that.
Yeah,
but I have not heard of a lot of tubs falling through the cracks. But I do think for that point, it is a metaphor. I think that's the only reason.
That's the only reason, and that it happened in Breaking Bad. Spoiler for Breaking Bad. They also pour some acidic contents down
really
the tub.
You can learn a lot on this podcast, like paper crane folding, bird crafts.
Yeah, do you want an update of the paper crane?
Yeah,
please.
Give us currently, I do want to say, if anybody heard like little folding noises during the podcast, I'm really sorry. I actually did stop folding it because I was like, ooh, like I. So now it looks like a fox head.
Uh-huh. Yep.
We are getting there, but I did pause it because I did not want anybody to hear folding noises.
Okay.
Well,
you can mute yourself and fold away.
Okay. I shall do that. Yeah. I'm now about 4 minutes into the tutorial. Okay. So,
all right.
It did not take me 4 minutes, I'll tell you that much.
Episode 6.
Multiply that by 4, and that's how long it's taken me.
Episode 6. The house is a mess, but it gets cleaned so fast and fixed so quickly. It's the least realistic thing about this season. I swear to you. That and the fact that they didn't immediately give them pain relief when they came into the hospital through the ER after a car crash. I'm like, what? So Jen is being very supportive of Judy and very organized. So you can tell that she's done this before. She's got a go bag. She's got goodies. She's got food. Snacks. She's got snackies. And she's also got triggered by the fact that her mom had and died of cancer. The nurse apparently that we meet only for her to die. By the way, God.
That was. Oh, okay. So like this, God, this nurse Francine, I think that's what her name was, an angel on earth, but like also like a little sassy. We love a sassy nurse.
I love a sassy nurse.
We love a sassy nurse.
They're all sassy in their own way.
And
trust me.
You know, this another common theme in this series is like motherhood, being a daughter, you know, and the relationship you have with that. And we learn that Judy and her mom don't really have a great relationship, and she's like really found, like, you know, Jen's been mothering her a little, but it's different with a friend. But this figure, this nurse Francine, has really become like somebody that she could like feel comfortable with, and they make they talk and all this stuff. And then for her to only like die, I was just like, why are you doing this to me? Like, I'm just a nice girl. I just want a happy show. Why?
I know the show is called Dead to Me, but
that's not what I thought. I just it was it's gonna be this, murders. I thought I was getting murdered.
Not like nice people dying of disease.
Nice people. And the conversations about Survivor, that was so funny.
That was really funny.
Yeah, it was great that the nurse is talking about she thinks that kids choose you, because Judy is saying that she never got chosen to be a mother. We saw in the first season that she had a miscarriage, and it had several miscarriages, which is unfortunately way too common among birthing people. And the nurse says, maybe you got chosen for something else, because my kids chose me and I don't even like two of them. And so
I appreciated that conversation as someone in my stage of life who the window gets a bit smaller every day for that to happen.
Right.
It was like a good reframe for me as a watcher to be like, yeah, maybe I was chosen for something else. It's not the end. And society puts such a spotlight on that in terms of like the role of birthing people specifically, you know, in terms of what we're worth. And our value and contribution to society. So I appreciated how the show kind of like had these conversations around what it meant to be a mother, around like to have a conversation about menopause.
Yeah.
In, you know, this is something that women have been told not to talk about in public for a very long time, but we are going to have the largest population of menopausal women, you know, reaching that age if we haven't already very soon. So, you know, these things do need to be talked about. And I hope that like it was just kind of a a refreshing conversation to have in the middle of all of this other stuff. But I will say for my Francine shout out is you know, one of the things that Judy was doing in chemo is the thing that Sarah's working on, which is making all the cranes, and Judy's like so kind, and she's like, you can take one if you want. Sarah did it.
Sarah did it, everybody. I can't believe it. I did it.
It's so ugly. It's the ugliest thing I've ever seen in my life.
I think you should frame it.
But I tried so hard to make this good.
You tried so hard and got so far.
And in the end, it does matter because I made one. Only 999 to go.
If someone, honestly, if my child came to me and told me that they needed 1,000 paper cranes, I would tell them they needed a different parent. Because, like, there's no way. I'm just not doing it.
A duck, but it's okay. I've never been more proud of something in my life.
I'm glad that this podcast could do that for you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
But and unlike Francine, because she's like, I never want to see another one of those things in my life.
I know.
I will proudly look at your crane, Sarah, for as long as you'd like to show it to me.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
During this episode, we also have to acknowledge that Charlie described Survivor as, it's not good. It's a bunch of starving people stabbing each other in the backs for bad pizza.
Who watches Survivor so good or so closely, probably listens to podcasts about it, to know that the pizza sucks. Like, that's like a very,
everybody.
Like,
there's no good food on that island. There's just either you get like, some or you don't.
Survivor pizza is so infamously like bad and like on RHAP, it's always spoken about. So I was just like, who listens to RHAP here?
Well, there's a lot. Like, if you look through pop culture in general, there's a lot of Survivor fans who write. I mean, obviously, there's the Mike White of it all, but correct, I mean, yeah. even in like a season of The Office,
yes,
they like pull in so much Survivor stuff. So
yeah,
you know,
actually,
Survivor is strong.
Yeah, I think I'm trying to remember because I was listening to the Office Ladies podcast, and they were saying how one of the cameramen used to be cameraman on Survivor, and then somebody was also involved in Survivor, and I think somebody from Survivor officiated Jenna Fisher's wedding.
That sounds right.
I can't totally remember the exact details, but yeah, it's very heavily in pop culture media, Survivor all the time.
Yeah, and I thought like how they brought it up was also very true to life, because even this week I said, you know, and I also like to watch Survivor, and someone said to me, like the TV show, which is exactly what happened on the show. Like, what else am I watching?
Yeah. Like, no, just to see if we all survive.
That's what I mean. I am watching Life. For. That is
true. I'm definitely watching Life. Nick is on to something and buys a bunch of birds at the craft store because no man can go to the craft store and only buy one bird.
It's like the Target of Michael's.
It is.
Yeah. How much are these birds? Like, you're spending a lot of money on like solid wood birds.
They are
like
solid wood. So he knows that it was at least like used in the killing of Steve, and it's the one like thing that was kind of dug into his skull that they can't identify. He solves the case pretty much because he's smart, but Perez knows this already, or at least doesn't need any more information about it than she already has.
Gaslights kind of him the whole entire
definitely does time. And buries all of the evidence.
So much so that Nick is questioning his ability to do his job well, because he's like, I'm so off base. Like, you obviously think that I'm a moron, because every single time I bring something up, you like diminish what I'm proposing. So it's like Perez like really is doing a mind F to poor Nick, who is like literally solving the murder by himself.
Yeah, but you know, they still shouldn't be cops. So I'm not that upset about it. So Jen is ignoring all of Perez's phone calls because it's, you know, it's time to compartmentalize people. And we got a montage of time passing wherein Judy looks exactly like a person who is doing chemo looks. It's harrowing, and I don't want to talk about it anymore. But then, yay, it's the last day of chemo, and Judy and Jen, you wouldn't do this on your last day of chemo because you'd still feel terrible, and mushrooms are, according to the internet, known to make you puke. Like, they upset your stomach. But yeah, no, Judy and Jen, like a couple champions, take mushrooms because why not?
We're not microdosing, not at all. Full on mushroom feast.
Yes.
Happening.
A lot of mushrooms were taken.
This is the stupidest thing I've ever seen. If I was somebody that committed a major crime, I am not doing anything remotely illegal. I need to take a low down. I just want to be on the low. I'm not gonna do like anything remotely illegal.
You and I are not the same. Are you kidding? I'm just gonna go all in at that point. I've murdered someone. What's worse?
I couldn't handle it. Why do you have so? I mean, I couldn't handle the mushrooms, but like, I couldn't handle the murder. Like, why do you have so much will to want to live day to day with all the shit on you? Excuse my language, but I would just turn myself in. I can't. This is too much stress.
You no one wants to go to prison, Sarah.
I do. If I did the crime, I gotta do the time.
I would like the prison system to be reformed a bit before you end up taking a taste of it. But
I'll tell you what. When I was a child, I stole a grape tomato from the salad bar. And my dad caught me. And he said, Sarah, what's in your mouth? And I said, it's a cherry tomato. And he goes, we are going right to the manager because you did a crime. And he said, the police are going to come after you. And I said, oh, no, I'm too young to go to the cops. Like, don't take me away. So then he, like, brought me up, and I had to admit to the manager that I stole a cherry tomato. And ever since then, I've been a good girl.
Way to go, Sarah's dad. That really worked.
I'm scared shitless. About everything. I'm scared of everything.
That is the mildest version of scared straight I've ever heard of in my entire life. And God bless you for having such a treasured existence.
But I still...
Were your parents paying for the food in that restaurant?
It was a supermarket. And
Oh, that's different.
I thought it was like a buffet, like a salad buffet.
No,
whatever.
A salad.
Those things salad that you could have before COVID.
Yeah, no. It was that. I mean, they don't have salad bars in supermarkets either. But I will say, to end the story, is that I still have a very big passion about cherry tomatoes.
I was gonna say,
I like really tomatoes. Are you love okay cherry tomatoes?
They're straight against crime, but not the tomato.
Yeah,
that's important.
I really, I eat a lot of cherry tomatoes.
They're great. Speaking of scared, Jen does the cardinal rule that you should not do, and looks in the mirror and kind of sees this was unnecessary. Her face transforms into her mother's face, which then just grays and rots away. And I don't know why we needed to see this. It could have literally been anything else, but it causes
Jen. It could have been an email.
Right. It causes Jen to think that she is having a heart attack. So, of course, her child takes her to the hospital while she is tripping.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And she finds out that it's not her heartbeat that she's hearing. It is her heartbeat and her baby's.
Okay.
Yeah, Marissa, what do you think about this?
I was like,
what's the science to this?
Yeah, can we be honest, Marissa? What do you think about this?
I mean, I have not experienced pregnancy, but I remember when my mom was pregnant with my sister and you needed equipment to be able to hear a heartbeat. I don't know if maybe because she was on mushrooms, but I just thought it was really one of the most interesting ways I've ever seen a TV character told she was pregnant. It's like, that heartbeat isn't yours. It's the baby inside of you. And I was like,
how far along is this baby?
Well, at least a chemo's worth away, right? Like a chemo treatment worth the
4 months, they say.
Yeah, 4 months. Very far along.
Very far. It's too far, as Jen puts it, which I appreciated her putting it that way because, like, good Lord. She's 4.5 months pregnant at 47 years old. Christina Applegate is 51, by the way, but can play a great 47 or younger.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I love dancers who act. She is a trained dancer.
Oh, look at that.
Mm-hmm. That has been since she was a little kid. Judy is surprised to see and hear that she'll probably need another round of chemo because the first round of chemo did not work. Mm-hmm. Ben is in rehab and Jen gets a poncho because she's afraid to tell Judy that she is pregnant. So let's just keep some more stuff from each other. We've got 3 episodes left, people.
I was very pro poncho. Like, I thought that
was a nice poncho.
I thought the poncho was beautiful. I thought that the joke was really funny. I like when she finally revealed to Judy that she was pregnant. She's like, why else would I be wearing this stupid poncho? I thought that was funny. I like the poncho joke. But yeah, she doesn't want to tell Judy because secrets are no fun unless you keep it in and make it, you know, kill you and from the inside out.
Yes, that's how it goes. That is the nursery rhyme I remember saying.
I can't stand it. I hate the secrets. Just tell everybody.
They're not good.
That's what I've been working in therapy. Like, I've spent like my entire life like keeping everything on the inside. Mm-hmm. And I'm at this point in my life, it's like I'm telling everybody everything. So if I, you know, have things to say, you know, you're going to know.
Say those things.
Say what you want to say.
Yeah.
Say what you need to say, as John Mayer would say.
Yeah, well.
Not that we should be looking up to him.
trash bag.
Face right now.
He's a trash bag.
He is a human garbage person. Anyway,
I wish
this,
that this
is
was
not
John Mayer
a show
podcast.
About John Mayer. Not yet. Sure? Anyway, oh, okay. I would love to trash musicians that deserve it.
You know, Ben probably listened to some John Mayer.
Oh but... yeah, if he listened to Rusted Root, he definitely yeah. listened to John Mayer.
To Dolly Parton.
No, but he was like talking to the cop. What is his name?
Nick.
And he goes, remember that band Rusted Root? They had a really good rhythm section. Oops. And I remember the band Rusted Root, which is only a band that you can listen to like once you've taken mushrooms, basically.
We have that Take Me or Send Me On My Way. Take Me On My Way.
Oh, Send Me On My Way. That's
LT still has not seen Matilda, so no. We're gonna have to get you on to see Matilda.
I'm gonna have
and
to.
Then you'll get to hear that song.
Yeah,
right? So
yeah.
You want to come on to that too?
Yeah, sure.
You love Matilda?
Yeah,
perfect.
Wonderful. I'm waiting for Matilda the musical.
Oh yeah. I've seen Matilda the musical. Actually,
coming to Netflix this holiday season.
Oh, wait. I hope that's soon because I saw that when on Broadway, and then I really liked that composer because he also did Groundhog's Day the musical, and that had some good music in it. Surprisingly, okay. So.
Well, good for them.
Yeah, Tim something or other. He's
Look up Tim something or other from Australia. I'm sure you'll just track him right down. Judy tells Jen. Judy will kind of come around in a minute to, like, you know, kind of discuss the whole pregnancy thing because it just kind of hits her like a ton of bricks because she's like, well, I'm dying and you're pregnant. So I'm going to go. And she falls into the pool and does a primal scream, which is truly like, give me a life where I can fall into a pool, do a primal scream and then go sit at some like nice fireplace with a glass of wine. Like, let that
an
be my life
fireplace.
One day. Outdoor fireplace.
Yep.
Their house is amazing.
It really is. Very pretty.
So Perez confronts Jen about Charlie in the car because Nick has found footage of Charlie driving said car involved in the hit and run and Jen admits to Perez that she is pregnant with Ben's baby. Judy goes to Ben. Ben shows up at Jen's house and because Judy has been finding a way to figure out how she can thank Jen for helping her through all the chemo. And we find out that that she knows that Steve and Judy. No, wait.
Okay, so
what? Sorry, we can cut this.
Okay, so basically, what happened? This is like crazy notes.
Wait.
So
hold on.
So basically, Judy goes to Ben. And we were thinking, like, oh, is she going to tell him that, like, Jen is pregnant with his baby? Is she going to tell about Steve? Blah, blah, blah. But he's going to tell her that basically what happened was, and this is so convoluted, so I'm not surprised it's confusing. Ben was in the car when Steve and Judy hit Ted, Jen's husband, and basically, like, you know, he kind of like winds up blaming himself because, like, Ted, they got into a fight because he was drunk and blah 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 blah. So I think, like, what he does, Judy does, is tell Ben that, and Marissa, if I'm like getting this right, I think, like, she says, like, Jen knows that, like, we are responsible for hitting the husband. I don't know. Does anybody remember? It's so convoluted.
I think that's the outcome.
Yes. The thing that Ben has been flashing back to, the argument that he had with his brother, that he keeps flashing back to, apparently happened on the same night that Judy and Ben and Ben's brother, Steve, hit Jen's husband while he was jogging. And they were doing that because they were driving Ben home because he had gotten drunk and got into a little bit of a fight with his bully of a brother, Steve. So yeah, it's basically for Ben a chance for him to come clean to Jen, and it kind of makes things okay between the two of them, I guess, question mark?
It's so convoluted, and this is this is ridiculous. And once again, like, this is where I'm like, why, like, we're adding layers for no reason. It's kind of like that TikTok meme where it's like, oh, give me another slice, like, oh, too many slices. Like, mm-hmm. There's too many slices. Like, we got too many layers here. It's getting, it's getting too cute. Like, it's getting too much.
Yeah. So we're going to compartmentalize ourselves here and talk about episodes 8, 9, and 10 together, because the show should have ended at 9, first of all. And secondly, they're very, like, the story comes together with these three episodes. So in episode 8, Judy is actually Googling about her cancer. It's not great. She goes to a holistic healer. I feel the exact same way when someone sticks me with those acupuncture needles. I completely understand it. I want to die. it's supposed to be good. I don't think it is. The FBI agent shows up at Karen's house because he wants to talk to Jen about Steve, and she's a terrible liar, so Judy pops in. She has scones and tea and is a great liar. Jen and Judy visit Jeff so that he can lie and
Jeff is Karen's husband, and
they're getting a divorce.
Getting divorced, and they, if you remember from season 2 when Judy and Jen went to go bury Steve's body in the forest, they go to a hotel to clean up, and they just so happen to run into Jeff, who is having an affair. And basically they want to, like, convince him to be the alibi. And the thing is, it was supposed to be a girls' weekend.
Girls and gays.
Girls
but they, like, go in without, like, any, they're like, remember that time, like, let me just gaslight you into this reality that I think is happening.
Essentially,
if you want this person to help you out, I'm like, you could probably have a conversation with them.
Yeah, and they probably would help, considering that they're, like, hooking up with your business partner now. They end up trying to go back over to Karen's house, who is getting a divorce from Glenn.
Well, because, like, Jeff. In season 2, I think Sarah, I think this is the road you were going down. In season 2, like, they had some, like, there was footage that Charlie had of them going to go bury Steve in the trash.
This is what happened. This was actually a continuity issue. So that I actually caught on to, not to be a jackass, but basically there's two times Jen went to Karen / Jeff to delete footage from their security systems. The first time was when she went to Karen and was trying to get her to delete the footage of Steve coming into their house.
Right.
Which is a separate time from when Jen went to Jeff to get Jeff to delete footage of Charlie's girlfriend vandalizing their house.
That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah. Okay. So the show got the two things confused.
Sure.
Because they...
how couldn't you?
Because it's confusing to everybody.
There's a lot going on.
So exactly. So, like, she goes to Jeff, but Jeff couldn't delete the footage because Karen changed the password. But it doesn't matter, because that footage was just Parker spray painting, "I know what you did."
That's right.
Which actually had to do with Charlie, because Charlie cheated on her.
But anyway, they get Karen to delete a year of footage. Her hard drive. That was exciting. Times
so many crimes.
So you know, while Jen is busy feeding scones to the FBI agent and crying to him, saying that you know, the baby was Steve's baby, I guess.
Oh yeah, this was a stupid plan too.
We don't have to talk about it. Judy is terminal, and the chemo did not work. She is essentially ready to go and give up her life on behalf of her best friend. So a lot of yada, yada, yada happens. And she ends up going to Nick to confess that she is responsible for everything. Like all of the murder, all of the Steve stuff, like it's on her. It's her fault. It's not the syndicate. Somehow Jen comes and gets Nick to agree to simply giving Judy an ankle monitor for 3 weeks while she goes to do a clinical trial. But Judy doesn't want to do the clinical trial. What she wants to do is go to Mexico and live out her last days. So her mother, who we mentioned earlier, found out that she had cancer, that Judy had cancer from Jen, decides to put on the ankle monitor, drive towards San Francisco, and gives the opportunity for Jen and Judy to run away, where they have this great little trip to Mexico. I'm not exactly sure where in Mexico.
Well,
they just say Mexico.
Apparently, I thought they were just going to a resort, but apparently it's like Steve
just
and Judy's
Steve's
house.
Giant house that he exists.
Yeah, and then at some point, why not? And then at one point, Judy found a key in one of her paintings where she stashes all of her money.
Yes.
And the key was to a garage where we see the car. Now, it's very interesting. I think that's a hyperbole. It's mildly interesting because
it's somewhat notable
because we saw in season two that Judy and Steve, or season one, took apart the car. Now, Steve brought the car to Mexico and put the car back together, because now the car, the same 66 Mustang that killed Ted, is fixed and now works and is back together, because why not?
I can't think of a single reason why not, frankly.
And then, you know, this really freaks Jen out, because I mean, this is the car, and that started everything. And Judy decides to gift the 66 Mustang to Jen as a parting gift.
Yeah,
I mean,
makes total sense, right?
There's a lot to say about friendship in this situation. I mean, yes, I think the show is like yada yada-ing a lot at this point.
And so are we. Because in episode 10, which is where we are now, they're kind of on the lam. Something happens and Jen starts to have a little bleed through. So they go to make sure the baby is okay. And they find out that it's a girl, and thank God she's got two boys. I know they're exhausting.
Who'd have thought that Judy knew Spanish this whole time?
I know. just like who'd have thought that Judy was such a crack shot, because the not FBI, but the Greeks try to follow them. She fakes another seizure, grabs a gun, shoots out their tires, and just kind of takes over the wheel and gets to go into Mexico. So they have a great time. We meet this cat that has apparently taken up residence at Steve's old place in Mexico that Judy loves. We learn that Judy always wanted a cat. She had one, but her mom let it out and it never came back, because cats are fickle that way. It's very sad. So scary Judy is the best Judy. And then we learn that Judy spent a lot of time with someone who may or may not have been her dad on boats. So she's always loved boats, and they have one there. So she takes a boat ride in the mornings to watch the sunrise. And one day Jen wakes up to find out that Judy has left a note this time, but like she's not there. And the cat is trying to get into the house from the outside. And it's just like, what's going on? Where is Judy? And the answer, we think, is that Judy is on the boat, which looks so beautiful and peaceful, and that she has passed away. And they yada, yada, yada through any type of remembrance or funeral or anything.
Oh, no, I think they had the celebration at the church.
The church celebration was something that's been brewing.
It was a concert. It was the Crane concert.
But I think that Judy knew, because
everyone knew.
Yeah. So I think that was supposed to be, I think that was felt, at least to me, very Judy. Like, I don't think she wanted anything special for her own. She just wanted everyone to be together and to be happy and to be surrounded by 1,000 paper cranes.
Yeah. It's very Judy. You're right. So Yeah, we're at Henry's concert, where he's got questionable rhythm. Lorna, everyone at this point knows that Judy has passed away.
Right.
She's not there, but Jen kind of sees her as she's driving back to this concert. And Judy says, I told you I'd always be there with you. And we realize that Judy's gone. But yeah, she walks into this church and she sees all of these paper cranes that she knows that Judy had a big part in making. And she sees this concert. And then the next time we see her, she has gone back to grief group. But she's there with her new baby, her baby Joey, who's wearing Judy Ann's little baby blanket.
Aww.
Ben's been released from prison this time. So he showed up to the concert and he's like on hand now. And everyone seems to be happy at home. Ben is happy for the first time in his life. Jen is just like kind of, you know, enjoying watching the three boys play with each other in the pool, you know, where she killed Ben's brother. And rocking the most symmetrically headed baby in the history of television.
Very, very round head. Yeah.
Very round head. And then just as, Ben gets out of the pool and says there's really no place he'd rather be, Jen says, I have something to tell you. And the show ends.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, like our general consensus is that like a lot happened.
Right.
What wasn't stupid was really, really, really sad. So I think that the stuff with Judy and her cancer, it's like, I don't want that to be the thing that I thought was good about the season because it's so sad. But when we don't have that and like how Judy is feeling in those moments and the sweet moments, but like how Jen took care of Judy was actually like really heartwarming. And especially because like how cold she was in season one and like how like Judy really helped her form to be like a warmer, more compassionate person. Like all of that's good stuff, but it's so sad. And then when it's not sad is ridiculously stupid. It's almost like, I'm trying to think like what would make me happy. And I think like, I wish that Jen never killed Steve. I think from that moment on, I think like the show kind of lost me because if we go down a path of stupidity and I think like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if I needed that. And I don't think I needed Ben doing a hit and run. Like, I don't think I needed that either. Like, it's interesting because, like, if Steve didn't die, then we would have never gotten Ben. Mm-hmm. And I do like Ben.
Yeah.
But, like, did we need it?
Yeah. Closing thoughts from you on the season, Marissa.
I think that, you know, the show tried to tackle a lot, and I think it had one perspective up until around season two and then kind of took another turn with, you know, Judy's story and where Judy was going to end up. And I like grief. I don't like grief. But I think it's a subject that needs to be talked about more, and it needs to be the stigma around grief needs to be lifted. People need to be able to grieve, not necessarily in public, but in a way that that is right for them and for us as a society to understand that. And so that's what I take away from the show is,
yeah,
maybe your way of you know, dealing with grief is to force yourself into being friends with this woman, with someone. And maybe there's, you know, your way of dealing with grief is some other ways that were explored in the show. But I always think about there's no right way to grieve. And I think that this show kind of like took that and expounded on it. And we saw so many different forms of grief, not just death, like friendship loss, relationship changes, things like that. So when I look at the show, yes, there's a lot of things with the plot that I could have done without. But I am grateful that it was here to sort of like help me explore grief for myself. So that's my closing thoughts.
I think from my closing thoughts before we sign off is that I wish that the show had been marketed a little bit more and a little bit differently, because we didn't get the kind of hilarious romp that we got in the first couple seasons. This season was really tough personally to watch, and I can only imagine that there are other people out there that feel the same, but I can also imagine that there are people who found it empowering to watch as well, because there are not nearly enough stories out there about grief. As Marissa said, there's not nearly enough stories out there about what happens to the extended network of people who are there during an illness, and what they go through, as well as what the ill person is going through, and kind of how it all feeds each other. So yeah, there are some things that I could have done without this season, but I'm ultimately glad that they went there in the end.
Yeah. I wish, okay, so like my last thought, I wish it was two seasons. I wish that she was able to eventually forgive Judy. They find the friendship. I don't know like how Jen would like, you know, rectify that in her head, but whatever. And she helps like, through Judy's warmth, she becomes like this better person, and she helps Judy through her cancer. I would keep the cancer storyline. I really would, but not that it makes me happy, but because I think that it's important. I think it was important for the characters, and I think it was important to show it and forgo all the gunk, forgo the Steve stuff, forgo the Ben stuff, forgo the baby stuff, and make this show about grief and friendship and not about murder. Because I don't think that Jen's a murderer, and I don't think Judy's a murderer. I think that they got themselves in situations where, you know,
they committed murder.
Where they committed murder, but it's out of character. And I never had fun watching them try to scramble and make up stories and hide from
the police. Thesis of the show. All right. So just to remind everybody, I believe that this is going to appear either in the binge feed or in the main feed. So just keep a lookout for it. If you are excited about us covering shows in this one-off kind of podcast way, then please let the people in charge know. Tell us about it on Twitter. We'll tell you how soon. But we also have a Patreon if you want to support us and our work. Signing up makes it possible for us to bring you these podcasts. So if you are a fan of coverage of shows like Dead to Me and you want more of that to happen, then consider signing up at any level. And when you do, you'll get some special patron perks, including our lively discussion channel from our patron Discord. Feel some kind of way about this season, about season 3, want to discuss it with us? You can probably find us in the binge feed to do so. And there are tons of people also happy to discuss your likes and dislikes on the patron Discord. So go to patreon.com/postshowrecaps, support Post Show Recaps and its podcasters, and support us personally. Why don't you tell us what you've got going on, Sarah?
Yeah, so over here at PSR, waiting for my next project to strike me, maybe something in the future, got a few ideas brewing, but I've had like a really good time talking with you about The Crown. Jess and I have covered a bunch of stuff. Marissa and I talked about sophomore slumps and a smidge about Dead to Me in Mediapedia, and that's all been very great. But yeah, just looking for my next PSR project. Over at Shit 90 Shows Taught Me, we are, oh my gosh, we are finishing up our coverage of Boy Meets World, which has been Jessica Sterling and I's little baby since 2020. And we are covering our last two episodes this week. And then we have a series finale recap and a season finale recap. And then we're done with Boy Meets World. And it's crazy because it's just wild. And then aside from that, we're still going through Dawson's Creek. We have some holiday bonus content coming your way. It's all good stuff. You can find me and my paper crane at Sarah Ferguson, and yeah, that's where you can find me and what I'm up to.
All right, Marissa, what about you? What are you up to?
Well, first of all, congrats, Sarah and Jess, on
coverage
of...
So, I'm just gonna, every single time I think about it, I like want to cry, but thank you so much.
It's a big achievement.
Thank you.
As for myself, I am hanging out with LaTanya, talking about Wednesday. Speaking of murders, speaking of theories, if those are things that you're into, that's a podcast for you to check out. We're covering the Wednesday Addams series on Netflix, 2 episodes a week-ish, so you can find them in their own Wednesday feed, which is pushyrecaps.com/Wednesday if you're looking for something. And then I, as Sarah, you mentioned, I work on Mediapedia with Grace, where we tackle big questions about media. Usually the answer, I'm not gonna spoil what the answer usually is, but listen in, you'll figure it out. And then other than that, you can find me on Twitter at MarsBars, MarzBrs, where I will keep you updated with the latest and greatest in terms of what's happening with me. What about you, LaTanya?
I am doing some things. The Wednesday podcast that you have already mentioned. And look forward to a little year-end podcasting coming your way. There may or may not be some podcasts coming your way about what all we've podcasted about in the year 2022. So that's something you should look out for. I was on episode 1 of The Crown with Grace. And then, as Sarah mentioned, we did our full season recap of season 5. What we liked, what we didn't like, what was amazing, what was not so amazing. Check us out in the Crown feed. The season finale of Andor has occurred, but we are still talking about the show over on the Andor feed. Mike Bloom and Josh Wigler came in with DM Philly to do some end of the season recapping work. And we will be coming to you soon with more Star Wars related content and more Andor related content. So keep up with that feed as well. Marissa and I were on Nothing But Netflix with Rob and Chappelle to talk about Wednesday. So if you are interested, yeah, and you've seen none of it yet and you want to see episode 1 or hear talk about episode 1, go there and then come find us here at Post Show Recaps and listen in on everything. And finally, I'm still talking about it because people are still talking about it. The series finale of Atlanta has happened and it was wild. And Mari and Chappelle and I were there for all of it. So the We Got Y'all crew have you covered. If you want some holiday binging, if you're looking forward to watching Atlanta, please check out our podcast about seasons 3 and season 4. All right, I think that wraps everything up. You can find me on Twitter at LK Starks, or you can find me on Instagram at Stormborn1222. I am just out here, people, podcasting away. So hopefully you all enjoyed this coverage. Thank you so much for tuning in. Bye.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.